Author John Edgar Wideman has been a Rhodes Scholar, a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, a two-time Penn Faulkner Award winner, and a National Book Award finalist. So at 76, you'd think he would rest on those laurels, but he says he's feeling freed by his age. In his new short story collection, he takes on nothing less than American Histories, which is also the title. There is history here that belongs to all of us. We find ourselves aboard the slave ship, the Amistad, then with Nat Turner. And history that we wonder, is this his alone? He's had several painful family passages. He's a writing professor, and oh, look, there's a character who's a writing professor. And John Edgar Wideman joins us from the NPR studios in New York. John, welcome.
Thank you.
We want to jump in right there. You write about the Williamsburg Bridge and a character who frequently walks it, but in your story is considering jumping off it. And then we remember that New York Times Magazine feature on you in which you walk the bridge with a reporter and apparently walk it a lot. There's another story the narrator talks about his mom who refused to give birth to him because it was Friday the 13th. The narrator was born on the 14th. So were you.
It's kind of mysterious, isn't it? There are a lot of coincidences, probably too many to be accidental. And I guess one subject of the book is, what is this stuff that you're reading, reader? I don't know exactly what it is, and I want you to kind of play with me or read along with me, and maybe puzzling out some of these issues will help us understand the stories.
Talk about the first story, J.B. and F.D., which I really liked because it signaled sort of an intimacy. J.B. being the abolitionist John Brown, white, caught and hanged after a raid on Harper's Ferry in Virginia. F.D., Frederick Douglass, the escaped slave. He used oratory. And you have these imagined, well, I think they're imagined conversations between the two. Did you lean on letters between the two? Did John Brown actually implore Frederick Douglass to come to Harper's Ferry?
I heard a question before the other question. Why are these dudes F.D. and J.B.? Well, that's raising the issue of history and raising the issue of the authority of a narrator and the authority of any story. I call people by their initials when they're good buddies, and that's a kind of street thing too. Here comes J.F. or here comes K.C. It's fun. It's intimate. And so by presuming to call these gentlemen, these historical figures, by initials already sets up a kind of relationship between the narrative voice and the characters. I just wanted to raise the curtain in a way that said, hey, these people are distinguished. These people lived in another time, but maybe they're also a little bit like you. Let's get right up front and personal.
It absolutely made me think of them in a different way. But I also found myself Googling a lot. Frederick Douglass's second wife was white. What were you trying to find out as you tried to become more intimate with them, make them guys you might play basketball with at one time, right? What were you trying to find out?
I think I was just throwing out lines. The way a fisherman might throw out lines or nets and willing to take whatever I could get. And I wasn't sure whether or not I had a subject for a story. But I did know, and this speaks to your point about information and Googling, one which I have not quite resolved and realized it had not been resolved when copy editors and fact checkers were going over the script. That is, as far as possible, the historical information is accurate. Mm. The two men did know one another. They did meet often. They had a kind of a quasi-secret relationship towards the end of their lives because John Brown was essentially a fugitive. And there was a price on his head. And just before he went to Virginia to actually commence that raid on Harper's Ferry, he did talk with Frederick Douglass. Hmm. I relied on that for part of the story. I do a lot of work.
Right. Well, so for instance, Horatio Seymour, governor of New York, really did, in addressing a mob in 1863 of hungover, mostly Irish immigrants, their hands still red from 3 or 4 days of wasting colored children, women, and men in draft riots. He really did say, my friends, in calling out to them.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
How much of it is, as a black man, trying to figure out how the heck did people cope?
Well, my books are not about how it feels to be a black man. My books are about how it feels to be a human being. And part of what I'm trying to sort out is what we mean, what I mean, what you mean, what everybody in the culture means. When they say black man or they say white person, and this racial identification remains a kind of weird sort of mythology and superstition that still haunts us and still divides us. And so I'm always writing at some level to sort of loosen that grip of race on our collective imagination, which is not to say race does not exist in one sense, but certainly to call into question the notion that any human being is somehow defined by some quality that's kind of hammered in or hand of God in before birth.
To the maybe most painful observations of the biographical, the characters have fathers who have killed someone, brothers who are in jail, sons, nephews who have been imprisoned, while the narrator tries to be a writing professor, tries to have their life. You have a brother who was imprisoned, a son who, while this was years ago in 86, he was on tour with some teenagers, stabbed his sleeping roommate in the chest. The boy died. And though your son was only 16, he was tried as an adult, convicted, sent to prison. He's since been released. These are, you know, very painful personal stories. How much were you trying to work through those here?
My son was released, but then he was reincarcerated, and that's a whole story in itself. There's no way you would know that. But the title of my book is American Histories, plural. And as far as I'm concerned, my reading of history is it is a sort of nightmare. It is a sort of nightmare. I'm trying to wake up from it. And as any nightmare, it's full of much that is unspeakable. And unfortunately, from my purview, most people's lives contain incidents, stuff that happens to them, stuff that happens to people they love, stuff that happens in the culture in which they reside, events that are unspeakable, just too painful to bear. And so you're left as an individual, as a human being, with this unfinished business. And there's a lot of it. And my response to those things in my life is to interrogate them, try to make sense of them, sing about them, cry about them, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's my answer. I'm coping, coping with history, coping with what it means to be alive. How do you talk about the Holocaust? How do you talk about slavery? Probably the best thing to do is just be quiet, hide from it, forget about it, except then it jumps up and bites you because it's there.
Well, and families have Holocausts. I'm very, very sorry to hear your son was reincarcerated. But John Edgar Wideman, when you say, you know, the list of things you do about the things that are too unbearable to talk about, when you say sing, do you mean write?
Well, I think they have a connection for me anyway. That's my that's who I am now. I could say that I dealt with those things when I played basketball. I loved basketball. There was nothing like going out on a Saturday afternoon or in the evening after school and getting on the basketball court and just giving it all up and wanting to fly. And that was a kind of singing.
John Edgar Wideman's new collection of short stories is American Histories. Thank you so much for talking to us about them.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.